Hello, welcome to the Professional Insights Podcast. Thank you very much for listening in season three. Thank you to our sponsors, Brand Boulevard.
Thanks, Sinkletch.
And if anyone is watching us for the first time from our advertising or blitz or whatever, thanks. My name is Brandon Curry.
I'm Jeff Collins.
I'm Josh Bond.
And Trevor Lindy.
So when we're recording this episode, it is October 14th, just for those to, for a frame of reference. And now this was done a while ago, back in March of 2020. It was approved and got royal assent, but it's called the TRESA legislation in the province of Ontario, which gives realtors the ability to incorporate. Which, if you ask me, that's long overdue. So hats off to ORIA. That's the advocacy body for the realtors. Definitely, I know that was a long battle and a 10-year battle from what I remember when I hopped on that call. So congratulations. And that just became legal October 1st, 2020, with all the framework and the do's and don'ts surrounding it. A lot of people don't realize that, you know, for example, lawyers and doctors and financial advisors and even
mortgage
brokers and dental hygienists are all allowed to have professional corporations. It's just every legislation is completely different and mutually exclusive to the next. It's just not like opening up a corporation, for example, for a lawyer on, you know, and Josh, you can chime in here, but
sure,
a lawyer can be an equity control and shareholder of their professional corporation. Doctors are the same, and then, but they can't have, they're not allowed to have a hold co off of theirs. There's a bunch of different rules and regs that surround each professional corporation. And we just thought,
just to a point there, Brandon.
Yeah.
Those rules and regulations are going to be governed by their self-regulating organization, right?
Correct.
So SROs. SRO, Law Society of Upper Canada, presumably RICO, they're going to set out the parameters. And just to quote you, or to back up on one of your quotes, I believe doctors can have their wives on
the
corporations.
They can.
But I think there's certain parameters. I'm not sure exactly what it is in terms of a different non-voting share, or less than 50%, I'd have to double check it.
But they cannot have a hold co hold their shares. That's one of the things
Fair. They can't do.
So Jeff,
yeah.
This is pretty big news for you. I know we've been chatting about this quite a bit. Your thoughts? I mean, you seem to be
pretty excited. My thoughts are, you guys have told me since I've kind of started networking with you that you hope this will happen, and we've been talking about for many years. It actually was a surprise when it happened October 1st, because we had been talking to people in the industry and we thought it'd still be a little bit of a ways away. To be honest, I'd love for you, because I know you're super educated on this and you watched the webinar that was just released, why don't you tell all of us realtors the big advantage it is to be getting a prec? I'm pumped about it, because there's tax strategies for sure, but...
Yeah, I mean, it's... So it is called a PREC, not to be confused with the adjective I usually call Jeff on this show, which is a prick. A PREC is a professional...
Different vowel.
Different vowel. a professional real estate corporation. And it's governed by the TRESA legislation in the province of Ontario.
Precs are legal now in Ontario, right? It's not Canada-wide, Ontario we're talking about, right?
No, so just like our SRO, our self-regulating organization, Trevor is the same.
RICO's only Ontario,
RICO,
right?
RICO is Ontario.
Yeah, it's all provincial.
It's all provincial regulated. So BC, a realtor can incorporate. Now Ontario, a realtor can incorporate. So...
Just as a quick backstory to that, it all goes to the division of powers in our constitution, in what's in 91 and 92. So one, the provincial government has jurisdiction, the other one's the federal. Federal banks, You know, things like that. But anyways.
Right. Like credit unions are provincially regulated. Banks are federally regulated.
Correct.
So now what the big advantage, Jeff, to be honest with you, is limited liability from that perspective.
Well, protection.
For protection, right? You do have the corporate veil in some cases that it would protect you. That does exist with corporations. But then the other one is the big one for financial planning and tax planning is a tax deferral, essentially, right? Like, or lowering your tax burden. So in the province of Ontario, the federal tax rate on corporations up to $500,000 of net profit is 9%. And then province of Ontario tax on an additional 3.5%, which that has just been reduced. So I believe it went down to 12%. So that corporation up till 500,000 is taxed at 12%. To put that into perspective, if a realtor were to make $500,000, their marginal tax rate, not their average tax rate, their marginal tax rate, they'd be taxed on 53% of anything over $200,000 of revenue and above.
It's about two, almost 230, isn't it?
$225 and change. Yeah, but like, just we just easily use whole numbers just for easy math sake.
Point of reference, yeah.
Everything's indexed to CPI and inflation. So this. If you're looking at a high volume, now to be perfectly honest, we're looking at anywhere from 5,000 to maybe 7,000 realtors in the province of Ontario that would make over $200,000 a year based on Rico and Oria's last stats. So that obviously could have changed, especially in this year in the province of Ontario with real estate, especially in Toronto, being up 11%. It's going to be significant. I mean, think about if we just use 50%. I know it's 53 and change, but let's just use 50%. That 300,000, right? You'd be owing $150,000 in tax right off the hopper. It'd be a bit more than that, but we're using easy math. You throw that into a corporation, pay yourself $100,000, maybe $200,000, whatever you want, but let's say you keep the $300,000 in the corporation. You go from paying $150,000 in tax to, well, that would be $36,000 if it's 12% of, $36,000 in tax. So I know there's a lot of people that are be listening, you know, saying, oh, this is garbage or whatever the case may be. No, because what this does is it keeps the expenses all on the up and up. I mean, you're looking for every expense that you can think of to try to write off to lower down your income. You're looking at different things. This allows you to put your, let's say your spouse on as T4 income, as an employee of the professional real estate corporation. This allows for you to transfer money that you don't need into a holding company. It allows you to purchase real estate. It allows you to purchase life insurance policies and make an estate and life insurance transition for your family. It's massive. It's absolutely massive.
It's big. I've had a professional corporation since 2008. So essentially, you know, to our listeners, for a lot of professionals, what we use our professional corporations for is retirement savings. Right. So say I make $150,000 in 2020 and the Bond family only really needs $50,000 of Josh's earnings to support itself. So I've got $100,000 where I can leave it in the corporation and only pay my 12 or 13% corporate taxes on it for this year. Now, that it's not to say that that's the only measure of taxes that you're ever going to pay on that money. Because then you may be taxed on it, or you will be taxed on it in the future, depending on how much you pull out But the idea is that at that point in time, you're going to trickle it out, not at 200,000 or 300,000 a year, but maybe 50,000, 60,000 a year, so that your incidence of taxes is significantly lower. From what I understand, I can draw out about $40,000 from my corporation every year without paying a dollar more in taxes, because I've already prepaid the corporate taxes on that.
Yep. Well, yeah, I mean, it just...
So you're setting up your own kind of RSP, right? So that you trickle it out.
Well, we got to put that into context too. Whenever you get paid commissions, it's on a T4A, not a T4. Okay, so that's number one. Number two, you do have to pay both sides of CPP on that. So in 2023, that'll be 11.59%. Then on top of that, you, because you're self-employed, have the ability to opt out of EI.
Can't you opt out of CPP as well?
No, not if you T4 your self-income. No.
If you T4.
If you
employment income.
Employment income counts. Dividend income does not count. So T4A is employment income, and you have to, up till, I believe this year in 2020, it's $136,000 of employment income. And so the maximum is going to be around $28,000 a year you can put into RRSPs. The rest, you have no other recourse. Now also that's coming out is the personal pension plan, which you can hold off of, which you can branch off of a holding company or a professional real estate company or a professional corporation, which we're going to be doing a webinar, by the way, boys, on November the 2nd for people that want to join in. Josh, I strongly suggest that you attend that webinar. And same with you, Jeff, because it gives you the ability to create your own defined benefit, defined contribution, or deferred profit sharing plan pension off of your corp. And that is something you can legally retire on going forward. And it's revolutionary. So these are the types of things that are now going to be available to realtors. And, you know, for how hard they work, and it is a very cyclical business, way more cyclical than a lot of others. And, you know, when the economy's good and when the interest rates are low and the weather's good, you're selling a lot of houses. You're hitting the ground running. But there are, peaks and valleys in this industry. And it just allows you also to flatten out your income and make it more steady and predictable, because you worked your butt off for 1 year, you keep the 100K in, like let's say that Bondo was saying, you only need 50,000 to survive. And then you allow yourself to be T4 $50,000 every 2 weeks out of your professional real estate corporation. So it's pretty significant, especially from a legacy perspective too. You know, we never know when our time has come. You know, we don't know how long we've got on this great green earth. And this allows you to leave money, hard-earned money, to the next generation or to your spouse without any worry. So
why did it take so long to be able to do this? Can you light me on that?
Lobbying. It all came down to lobbying. So you...
Every organization had to do it.
Every organization had to do it. And really, I guess for the longest time in the 90s or even previous to that, there wasn't a huge concern. There wasn't a lot of realtors probably making over $150,000. Like if you think about it, we're conservatively predicting out of the 70 or 89,000 realtors in the province of Ontario, only about 5,000 of them would make over $200,000 in gross commissions. That's based on, like I said, Rico and Oria.
Really the top 5%.
Yeah. So when you think about that, that's really, really small. So back in the 90s, probably it was even smaller than that. And so there wasn't really a huge demand for it. But now with real estate going through the roof, you've got a lot of, think of the Niagara region. 5 years ago, the average real estate in Niagara was what, 238?
5,300 maybe?
Yeah, $250,000 the average home price. It's now over $400,000 is the average home price. That's
closing in on five real quick too.
Right. So you're looking at a 5%, like put that at 5%. Now that realtor who would only maybe do 10 houses a year would be making at 5% of 200,000. You're looking at what? 10 grand. So half of that five, you're making $50,000 to $60,000 a year. Mm-hmm. Well, all of a sudden, just doing the same volume, your prices have doubled and you're now making $120,000 to $130,000 a year just doing the same volume, not even ramping up, not even taking into account, you know.
Well, it's getting more competitive too. So some commission rates are starting to be sliding a little bit too.
Sure. Really, eh?
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
In this hot market.
Well, the top agents are still getting paid, but there's ones that are struggling out there too, right? So they'll be more competitive there with the rates to appeal and all that. It's you know, that's another one we'll do obviously later on, discount brokerage and all that. But like a top agent, you know, if you know what they're doing, can get you so you're not even paying commissions going over list, right? So it's different. Market's funny.
Right. So
yeah.
It's Jeff, to answer you, I know that was a very long-winded answer, but it's very significant for your industry.
So you wouldn't say every realtor should get a practice?
No. If your gross commissions are in between the $120,000 to $150,000 a year, you should seriously be considering talking to your chartered accountant and your financial planner and really starting to kick tires and figure out if it's worth it or not. It's at that threshold, because that's when you're at the 43 to 47% marginal tax rate. And that's where you're starting to lose a significant amount of your income.
So a brand new realtor getting into it should be jumping off and getting a prec right off the bat.
That's not necessarily true. I mean, if they know,
depends on their volume, I guess, right?
Yeah, like,
well, depends on what they want to grow to, right? Or
yeah,
right. Like if they're joining, let's say Jeff, let's say you decide to one day open up a partnership, and now each individual realtor needs to have their own prec. You can't have a partnership in a prec.
Yeah.
But let's just say you create a sub brokerage underneath Royal LePage. And then underneath your Royal LePage sub brokerage, you get to have a prec and a prec with your business partner. Mm-hmm. And you go away on vacation, and that person's going to slowly buy you out as you slowly retire. Well, mm-hmm. that person knows that they're going to be ramping up their business fairly quickly. So it's probably in their best interest. Yes, in the first 3 to 5 years, probably it's going to be low volume, but in the long run, it's going to be well worth having it all set up and ready to go, and they don't even have to worry about it.
So if my sons want to get into it, say 10 years from now.
Right.
And I'm ready to kind of ease out of it slowly while I'm helping them getting their feet running. That'd be something that'd be, if it's still around, obviously I don't think they can get rid of Prex once they
no, pass. No, they won't. No.
But we're here's some other considerations. So you also have, I believe, as an opco or operating company, entitlements to tax-free sales under your tax-free dividend account. So if you were to sell some of your shares to another licensee, I believe you could have a decreased tax rate on the sale of those shares as well.
Yeah, that's correct. So the capital dividend account, and also on top of that, because you have an operating company, you also are entitled to the lifetime capital gains exemption. So let's just use Jeff's example, okay? So Jeff's example, he has two sons, Ryder and Colby. Ryder wants to go into real estate. Colby's like, I want to pave my own way. I don't want anything to do with this. Mm-hmm. But because of a phenomenal financial planner, hi, Brandon Curry, set Jeff up with a personal pension plan off of a hold co or off of most likely off the hold co. He can now retire off into retirement. And Ryder, with all that cash sitting in the prec still, maybe he just didn't piece everything off, comes to terms with a purchase agreement for his dad, and he buys the existing prec off of his father.
for a, let's just say, $1 million in today's dollars. Well, because Jeff owns the shares personally, he and it is a qualified small business corporation, he can get up to the first $1 million of sale tax-free. He can
Is it up to a million?
Well, so Farmery and Fisheries is $1 million that's frozen until the regular lifetime capital gains exemption, which is indexed to CPI, gets to $1 million. And I think it's at like 875,000, 880,000 in and around there.
And I can do that once in my life, right?
So you can do different chunks. Like you can own a company elsewhere and do 200,000, and then you're left with 800. But that 800 is always indexed to CPI.
Okay.
So it allows you to free up cash flow out of your corp, but Ryder won't care because Ryder will know that, hey, the business and the brand is really good. My dad did a really great job, so that's worth goodwill of some sort. Then there's existing sales and existing clientele. He'd be buying that book of business, so that has some money to it. And then you probably, let's say, have $300,000 or $400,000 of just cash sitting in the corporation. So he's sitting there going, "Well, I can justify buying it for $1 million," and Jeff gets $1 million out of his corporation tax free.
I remember this teach out we went to at the St. Catharines Golf Club. I think I went talking about that. If you're selling it to your children, make sure you get the value and all that. I remember that.
So it's anyway, that's pretty much.
I remember talking to you the other day, Brendan. I think you said something interesting that if I have an opco for my build company,
yep,
and then I do a prec, I can use my opco for my build company because it's still my opco.
My holdco. Yes.
And I don't need to get a new holdco for my prec. I can use the same holdco.
Correct.
For both my building company and my.
Yes. So
I don't know if your holding company can own shares in your prec.
Yes, it can. As long as the equity and controlling shareholder is a licensed realtor, which in Jeff's case, it's not the way that we structured the holdco off the opco of the building company.
Now, does that affect the deals on my holdco too?
No. So as long as you own a minimum of 10% of a holding company and you own 10% of an operating company, you actually don't have to have the holdco own the shares of the opco. You could do dividend transfers on a tax-deferred basis to the holdco. So that would still classify because under the TRESA legislation, Jill is not actually a shareholder of the PREC.
Okay.
Right. So she's an equal shareholder on the holdco. So that's totally fine. And the holdco doesn't own the operating company.
Okay. So really what you're telling me is this is confusing stuff and talk to pros like you and Josh and make sure you're done right. Right. Like, but it's definitely advantageous to realtors because of limiting our liability. You know, reducing our tax burden, you know, and really we can save a little bit more and invest it properly.
But let's be honest. I have to address the fact of limiting your liability unless I don't think it'll have the effect of limiting liability because the licensee isn't the corporation itself. It's the realtor behind the corporation.
Correct.
So I wouldn't count on it so much so for a limitation of liability. Make sure you have your errors and omissions still 100%. Attached to you.
Well, we have to have that no matter what, right? So
yeah, but I wouldn't normally I'd always say incorporate from a liability perspective, but when you're dealing with a professional and a licensee, it doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt to try to kind of.
So would you say the PREC is like 75% tax savings or strategies is the benefit of it for realtors?
90%.
98%.
Yeah.
98. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So if you don't fit within that ambit where you're storing away, money. Nuts for the future, then might not make the most amount of sense unless you think that you can get there in a relatively short period of time and you're just kind of laying the track beforehand. For somebody like you, Jeff, who has been in it for a while and has presumably a measure of earnings that you can defer taxation on then it definitely makes a sense from a tax perspective. You know, there are some other things that you're going to have to file taxes for that corporation every year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's not all roses and sunshine. There are other drawbacks.
Well, it's increased cost, definitely, for rent a prac, right?
That's right. That's right.
Okay. That's right. It's interesting, though, because it is big news for realtors, and it definitely helps the top 5% of realtors. I think save more money.
Another thing, and I don't know if Brandon touched on it and I missed it, but like your life insurance policies, your universals, your whole life's, like when the only reason that I bought a universal policy, to be honest with you, I think it's a good product, but is because I bought it through corporate dollars.
Yes.
You bought it with tax savings, more or less.
I'll go down that. That should be another, okay. That should be another episode.
Sure. We can round this one up and we can knock the other one up.
Okay. I think we have Michael waiting anyways, right? So, yeah.
Yep.
Cool. All right. Thanks everyone for listening. If you have any questions, please drop them and let us know if we can be any more assistance.
And talk to a pro. You want to do it right.
Help you.
Go ahead, Josh.
No, you tie it up nicely there for me first, Brandon.
All right. Well, thanks very much, everyone. And over to Josh for rounding it up, please.
Help us help you stay informed.
Ciao. Thanks, everybody.
Out.
You looking to make the most out of this life and optimize your personal wellness? Then check out the Natural Man Podcast. Join me, host Mike C., as we explore all areas of human wellness, physical, mental, and emotional. Learn strategies to optimize your own well-being and be in the driver's seat of your own health. Remember, your doctor works for you. Learn biohacks, neurohacks, ways to improve sleep, and ways to optimize your body and your mind. Check us out on Apple, Spotify, The Fountain App, and at naturalmanpodcast.com.
The Podcast Super Friends is a monthly meeting of 5 podcast producers.
Hi, I'm Catherine O'Brien from Branch Out Programs in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
I'm John Gay from Jag and Detroit Podcasts.
I'm Matt Kundle from the Sound Off Podcast Network.
I'm David Yes from Pod 617, the Boston Podcast Network.
And I'm Johnny Peterson from Straight Up Podcasts.
Together, they form the Podcast Super Friends, an alliance of podcast masterminds sharing best practices, insights, and discussions to help make you a better podcaster. Follow or subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or at soundoff.network.
Hear ye! Hear ye!
Produced by Cryer Media and distributed by the Sound Off Media Company.